Ladies and gentlemen, pay attention. This is your boy, the coach from the WWE. I would like to welcome you to the very first wrestling podcast in the world to take you on a weekly deep dive into classic matches along with legends of the squared circle. Enjoy the discussion. Enjoy the back and forth. There's so much to get into. Ladies and gentlemen, this is The Payoff.
Welcome to an all-new episode of The Payoff. I'm Tom. He's Jeff. We're excited to be here. Thank you, as always, for listening. Jeff, how the hell are you doing?
This is, I'm doing good. We got a, we have not talked about a Saturday night main event yet. And so I'm excited to be talking something new. We got a new wrestler that we're adding to the list as well too, with Jake the Snake. And so this should be fun. This match is a little nutty. It's a deep cut, I guess, in a lot of ways, but excited to get into this one and talk about it. So yeah.
I'm excited for a few reasons. So first of all, this is like an older match, which is good. We've been covering a lot of newer stuff recently, but I like covering some of this stuff. 80s, yep. Early 90s. That was kind of my favorite time to be a fan. So ironically, don't ask why. I have no idea. Maybe what triggered it was something Bruce was talking about on his podcast. But I've been watching some of these old Saturday night main events on Saturday mornings with my little baby boy. So we go down to the basement. I throw him in this big bean bag, and he gets glued to the TV. Like, you know, he like kicks and he gets all excited about wrestling. And they're, what's fun about these Saturday night main events is they're only like 45 minutes long, because they were an hour long with commercials. And then, you know, you get like, there'll be like a Hogan match and a Savage match and a Hart Foundation match. And there'll be some really good vignettes and interviews, and the time just flies. Obviously there's no commercials. They're really fun to watch. So I've been watching a bunch of them. I'm really excited to cover this. Why did you pick it? And Why did you want to cover it?
And this was one we, when they announced some of the early topics for the new season or new kind of episodes of Dark Side of the Ring, we saw that the Roberts name was on there and his kind of family, and kind of digging into that a little bit. And so I think that was the main reason for me. And then two, we hadn't covered him, but then three, he was probably one of favorites when I was growing up. Like, I just remember a lot of Jake the Snake stuff. I remember being like terrified by him, and Damien too. And the, you know, and like just him being that kind of heel character. I have early memories of all that stuff. And then I know too that my aunt actually, I don't know what happened to it, but she actually sat next to him on a plane once and got his autograph. And so, that was always the kind of claim to fame for her in that sense. And so, kind of having that. So a lot of reasons for me to want to get into this one and talk about it. And, but it's Jake the Snake. He's cool. You know, it's a cool gimmick that not everybody by any means could ever pull off. And a lot happening with this one. So I'd say let's jump right into it and talk about the build.
All right, let's get into the build.
Oh, it's time for the build.
All right, so we are at the Richfield Coliseum outside of Cleveland, Ohio, in Richfield. Some really big events took place in this building throughout the 80s. No. This was by the time that I first was in Cleveland and went to a Cavs game, they were already in the new arena, which is the Q Gund Arena. This is the old one, man. This was Richfield. This was way away. But they had some, was it the first Survivor Series was in Richfield, I think. I think so. But I never went to this building. I think it might still be there, but I'm not positive. Don't quote me on it. Maybe we'll look it up. So on this show was, and this was back when they would air them way late. I mean, they recorded them like a month ahead of time. The NBC people would be there. So they recorded this September 13th of 1986. Then it aired on October 4th, 1986. It's just crazy that this was, and I know it's like, we're going to sound old by saying this, but you could do stuff and nobody would know it happened for a month, and There were no spoilers. I mean, maybe like the dirt sheets put it out there of what happened. Maybe they didn't. I really don't know. But it was still cool that no one really would know this stuff. Hulk Hogan defeats Paul Orndorff by DQ. They're still doing their feud that obviously culminated in that cage match, but really good feud there. Hogan's your champion. Steamboat and Roberts, the match we're going to cover. Roddy Piper would defeat the Iron Sheik in 43 seconds. The British Bulldogs would defeat the Dream Team. 2 out of 3 falls tag match. And then Kamala defeated Lanny Poffo in 1:44. So the Saturday night, like I said, you weren't getting 28-minute five-star classics. It was just a cool show to tune in and be like, what's going to happen next? Oh, it's Hulk Hogan. Oh, it's Earthquake. Oh, it's, you know, Ricky Steamboat. It's Roddy Piper. It's a Jake the Snake promo. Like, there was just a lot of cool stuff that happened, a lot of your favorite superstars. And you probably don't remember a lot of it, certainly the vignettes. So they were just really, really fun shows to watch. This one was no different. And I'm really excited to hear how we got there because, I mean, two iconic guys in Steamboat and Roberts. I might argue, Jeff, two of the more underrated guys when you look at those, two are some of the best guys to never be world champion.
Yep, absolutely.
So how did we get to this one?
So we'll start to notifying the fans. Yes, the Richfield Coliseum was closed in 1994, demolished in 1999.
Okay.
And you were half correct, actually. The first Survivor Series was at the Richfield Coliseum, but so was the second Survivor Series.
Ooh.
And so the first two shows, both being there, and then returning in 1992. So for 5-6 years, the Richfield Coliseum, a hot event, or, you know, hot ticket for Survivor Series. Didn't know that, but that's what we do, bringing you that information. So, like you said, Saturday Night Nine event. So it actually debuted. It was May 11th, 1985. It was late night because what it would actually do is it would slot into when Saturday Night Live would be on, and it was in reruns. And so it wouldn't really air during that time. But name we've heard and Vince has interacted with for a very long time, Dick Ebersol, who was the Saturday Night Live executive producer at the time, made a deal with Vince McMahon to produce this show.
Did he spin the wheel to make a deal?
Must have. And so this was Vince Jr., not Vince Senior. But, you know, because Ebersol had actually seen them do some of these little shows that popped a rating on MTV and a couple other places in 84 and 85. And so he wanted to bring it over to NBC as well too. Now, and I didn't realize this because I'd heard Saturday Night Main Events that, you know, the show, it really aired infrequently, but it did have somewhat of a pattern. And I want to get into this during the show, but it would do New Year's weekend, February, like late February, March. They would do late April, May, September, October, and Thanksgiving weekend. And so they kind of had a week, and I always thought it was just a weekly thing. It's definitely not, that it would air a couple times a year, that there were some different Saturday Night Main Events, you know, over the years. This is, I guess, in like how many there were, this is 7, and this would have been the 7th one that occurred.
Well, and what was big, and what's crazy too, is that, remember, they didn't have like Raw. So a lot of the big angles, and that's what was so fun about these shows, is you didn't get a lot of times the blow off match per se, but you got like the big angles. So a lot of really big things happened, you know, like the Hogan Savage, you know, mega powers explode. Like that happened on Saturday Night's Main Event. So you got some really cool angles with all the big stars, because this is what, two things. This is what got you to WrestleMania or to the Royal Rumble or to SummerSlam, number one. Number two is this is a lot of times what got you to the next house show loop. So, hey, I saw, you know, that bastard attack that guy on Saturday Night's Main Event. But, hey, when they come to Omaha, I'm going to watch him get his revenge. And so he's really set the stage for – you know, you mentioned the cadence. They would set the stage for the next 2 or 3 months or the next big pay-per-view. So it's just, I always just find it interesting how much different the business was from that standpoint. Like, you know, you look at football, Well, football's always been the same. They've played games, right? You know, you do a draft, and then you play a bunch of games, and you have a Super Bowl, and it's on TV. The only thing that's really changed is now there's Sunday night football, because they've always had Monday night football, right? And there's Thursday night football now, but it's kind of the same thing, right? Like, what's interesting about this is how much different, and I know it's entertainment, but it's just so much different. Like, at this point, you know, they were trying to get fans. Their revenue was from putting asses in seats at buildings throughout the country. And at one point, they had an A show, a B show, and a C show. So they'd be doing a show in Madison Square Garden. They'd be doing a show, Charlotte, and they'd be doing a show in a town you've never heard of. And they do it all again this following night. And they had, you know, the A loop, the B loop, and the C loop headlined by different people. And everything was about attendance. Let's get as many people into the arenas as possible and sell a bunch of merchandise. And so they'd be using this show really to tee that up. It's not like they had a huge TV rights fee at that time. And then pay-per-view became a big thing. But then a lot of times the decisions they made on pay-per-view were not so that you got the end of it, but it was, you know, sometimes the beginning of a feud so that they could, you know, continue filling. So it's just a lot different. So it's just, I always enjoy watching some of this stuff thinking, you know, what's the strategy behind it? Like, what are we doing? Oh, well, we're trying to, you know, build to WrestleMania, or we're trying to, you know, make this guy a star so he can be the, you know, guy that headlines the B house show loop. So anyways, it's just interesting of what they were using this for at that time.
Well, and you bring that up, it was actually like, it was huge rating success for NBC, and it was
massive.
One of the biggest nights for this was actually March 14th, 1987, that Hogan and Andre were actually in a battle royal together. And this was prior to really weeks prior to their battle at WrestleMania 3. It was about 2 weeks prior to that, 3 weeks. And so you had,
they didn't build that match. That's the thing about Hogan and Andre. It's not like that build started like in the summer. That all happened in like February, right? March.
And people knew who Hulk Hogan was. They know who Andre the Giant was. And to catch them on really free TV on NBC, that was rare. And so to get that and kind of have that, and that, like, that night, that show is, it had Randy Savage, it had King Kong Bundy, it had the Hart Foundation, it had Ricky Steamboat and the Sheik. So it had huge names. So I get why it popped the way it did. So but you actually had Jake the Snake Roberts. He actually started his career, it was 1974 in Louisiana, in the South. He was a referee, he was a wrestler, really making a name for himself in a couple different promotions, Mid-Atlantic, Mid-South, just GCW, just a bunch of different ones. But he went into Canada for a little bit, was the Stampede Wrestling, and just, you know, kind of having a bunch of different feuds there. He actually made his WWF debut. It was March 1986. And then it was a month later, it was his pay-per-view debut at WrestleMania 2. And so he got thrown, he had been wrestling for a while. He had also been like part of the Legion of Doom prior to this. It was with the Road Warriors, but then also, Paul Ellering and kind of doing that, but got hired and then right into WrestleMania 2 and doing that. So Steamboat, it was actually 1985 when he got offered a contract as well, too, made his debut, got the Dragon nickname, kind of, you know, that's, you know, followed him as, you know, I don't remember him as ever not being the Dragon, because that's just not how it happened. And so he actually had Hercules Hernandez is who he got his first victory over at WrestleMania 2 as well, too. They then immediately kind of started feuding between the two of them. And so WrestleMania 2 happened, and then we get right on to the next bit. And so and really the two of them going back and forth, the feud actually started. It was WrestleMania, Saturday Night Main Event previous to this, WrestleMania, or Saturday Night Main Event 6, I'll say it right. It was May 1986. So just prior to this one that we're talking about right now, I say prior to the show prior to that. So had a match where it did, you're supposed to have a match where they kind of, supposed to have a match, but did not happen because Roberts assaulted Steamboat before the match. Now, the story that I was reading on this one was it was one of the first times, or it was just one of the times where they were supposed to do a spot where Jake the Snake was supposed to DDT Steamboat onto the exposed concrete floor next to the ring. And Jake the Snake did not want to do this move, but he took some convincing, kind of reading like Vince McMahon, the booker, that Steamboat actually said it would be protected. But of course, and I went back and watched this, and it is rough. Like, took the DDT, it actually knocks Steamboat unconscious. You can tell when he's trying to pull, Jake's trying to pull him up, kind of get him back the ring. As my brother and I say when we're watching sports and someone like takes a hit, big hit or something like that, like the lights are on, but nobody was home. Just kind of him kind of struggling. And so, how he described it is Roberts, the quote was, Roberts later described the sound as like a watermelon bursting. And so when he hit his head, it had an odd thud to it. It was not great to listen to and watch. And so, but he kind of, recovered. It was fine. He actually started introducing, Jake always had Damien, obviously the Snake. Steamboat started introducing the quote Komodo dragon, which was really just an alligator crocodile.
He has a weird looking thing, man.
It's a dragon. I get it. Whatever you want to call it. So they're all dinosaurs, whatever. So, but had that. And so in order to kind of combat Jake Snake, you had the alligator as well too. And so that's why we'll start with the promo of, you'll see a little bit of it with the kind of dragon and kind of doing that. So, and kind of having that. And so they actually did have, this was not the build to this. So like I said, it started after in May of 1986. They actually had it was a snake pit match, which is just a no DQ match. It was in front of 75,000 fans. It was the big event in Toronto, Canada, which was August of that year. Steamboat won that one actually. But, after Roberts had really kind of owned the match for most of it. And so that was really their biggest kind of TV match prior to this match taking place. And that was an interesting card itself. It had Hulk Hogan and Paul Orndorff again too. You had Harley Race on that card. You had just a lot of big names on that one as well too. So just kind of interesting. But so you've got the WrestleMania or the main event 6, which was in May. You had this snake pit match, which was in August. And then we get to this main event once again, which happened, like Tom said, being recorded in September, but then actually going on TV and airing on October 4th, 1986. So things happening. I did not realize, my thought real quick is I did not realize just how long these guys feuded. But granted, there wasn't a lot of matches every week, but they feuded for a long time during this period.
Yeah, I had no idea either. Sometimes in this era, it's tough because I at least for me, and I'm sure it's the same for you, where if it didn't happen at WrestleMania, I either don't remember or, it kind of flies under the radar. Like, I could tell you every feud that culminated at WrestleMania, but what happened in between. But that's what's fun. That's what makes it fun to watch this.
Yeah, absolutely. So I am ready to get into this match if you are ready, my friend.
I am ready. So here's the deal. We're at the 25-minute mark of Saturday night's main event 7. Finding it on the network is the in-ring shows. You got to go to all of them. You got to go to Saturday night
too. Yeah.
Oh, you could. That's probably way easier than the way I've been doing it.
You can actually search for it.
Yep. But either way, it's October 4th, 1986. So October 4th, 1986. You ready?
Let's do it. We got Mean Gene in the shower. Let's do it.
All right. It's time for the payoff.
Ho! It's time for the payoff.
Yeah, so the end, we got Mean Gene in the...
It was the end of an interview with Jake the Snake, and we come right out to Ricky the Dragon with his crocodile in a bag, he's putting it in the corner now. But now we get back into the promo of him holding it and cutting a promo with it. So I'll start out. I might be spoiling it a little bit with my score here, but I am a fan of the props of the animals on this one. I'm not going to lie. I don't know about you, but it makes sense, you know?
Yeah, this is probably not a match that PETA was happy about.
No, and it's, again, we know it's
going to be a quick one. We have a reptile in each corner?
We do. Yeah, I know. Not something you see all the time, but yeah, you know.
WrestleMania 2000 was a McMahon in every corner, but this match was a reptile in every corner.
Ooh, fast strikes. Both guys coming right out, swinging hard.
Dude, I'm digging Steamboat's outfit, man. I like the look at that.
The look, yep.
Yeah, I don't know, a headband and kind of the tights. I don't know. I like
the tight color. Yep.
God, good old arm drag. The classic, yeah, quick, Ricky Steamboat.
You don't see a whole lot of arm drags nowadays, you know. But that, right out of the gate, quick pace here. These guys kind of going at each other. So this is interesting. The kind of psychology of this, of like Ricky dragging Jake into his corner, and then Jake, like, to kind of use the dragon as kind of, you know, to intimidate him a little bit. That's interesting. Yep. Fans are really going nuts on this one.
Well, yeah, I know.
And so they're cheering. They're kind of up on their feet as
wrestling
well, too.
Wrestling fans used to be so much better. Like, like 2/3 of the people there right now probably think this is real, and they're excited about it, and they're not some, you know, asshole smark, you know, that's just bagging on everything for not being a 6-star classic. Like, these people are just having a good time watching some wrestling. The world was a simpler place in 1986, my friend.
Well, and this is it, you had so much more than we have now. Extremely defined heels and faces, and so and in every way, like, Steamboat was the face in this one, and Jake was the heel. And so, and you knew, again, there was no question. And look, every single time that Jake takes a hit or Steamboat does something, they're cheering for him. Jesse Ventura, I heard on there too. Yep,
believe of course. So. You know what's funny too? So this is like peak Hulk Hogan like fandom, right?
Yes.
I see one Hulkamania shirt. Why? Because merchandise just wasn't as big of a deal then. Isn't that crazy? I see a little bit of stuff. Like, most people aren't wearing shirts. Like, yeah, most people aren't wearing. You know what I mean? My point is that most people aren't wearing merchandise. Now they are. But, I mean, the fans were probably crazier back then. But just merchandise just wasn't as big of a deal. Just interesting.
Well, I saw one Hot Rod shirt in the front, but that's because he's sitting in the front. And then you can see the occasional yellow shirt in there, but that's it. Like, yeah, that's the thing. But, you know, they figure, too, they're making it cheap. You know, they probably didn't have a whole lot of it. There was definitely not the system. And so, yeah, Dragon going for the bag and the Dragon, but then Jake kind of stopping him. Oof. And a gut buster there, taking him out. And so this has been fast-paced. Like, right out of the gate, these guys moving quick.
Well, Steamboat's just incredible in the ring, and Jake was probably an underrated worker. And Jake's a big dude, man. You forget.
Yeah, and he, especially standing next to Steamboat, like, he looks like he's really towering over him. Like, it's somebody actually quite impressive.
Yeah, somebody brought up an interesting point. I forget where I read this or heard this, but isn't it interesting that Jake never had, like, a really good feud against Hulk Hogan? Like, he probably should have during this era.
And I will actually be talking about that in the aftermath, because I have a quote from Jake actually of between him and Hulk Hogan that I think you'll appreciate. So yes, I read your mind. I have done my homework on him and Hogan. Yep. And so
how good was Jake's DDT, by the way?
Well, like, it was the DDT.
Like, so good. No one's done it better, even all these years later, man.
Yep.
Something about the way he did it.
And that's one, as many people and as many variations as we've seen it over the years, like, Jake's will always be the DDT to this that sets the bar. Yep.
Hey, absolutely. Is he still around in AEW?
Yeah, I believe so. Okay. He may not be on every week, but I know he was doing a lot. Yeah. So, which was great. And I think that's one thing. I think you and I have both seen the redemption of Jake the Snake. Is that what it's called? Correct. Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
And that kind of documentary and kind of him, I mean, really on the edge of death, like, and seeing him come back to
beyond. I mean, he was done.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was, I mean, that was rough to watch. Like,
very uncomfortable. Yeah.
And so, and for him to be in that situation, DDP, who's literally saving wrestlers' lives and, like, you know, doing that, and then to kind of, you know, build back up. And I get he's still got his demons, and, but now he's working with Lance, you know, Lance Archer, who we met at StarCast, and kind of managing him as well, too, kind of doing that. So just, you know, kind of fun to see that. But yeah, just, you know, great. And we're going to talk, too, about his mic work. This was prior to him kind of having some of that and doing the snake pit in his interviews and things like that. And I kind of wish we would get more segments like that nowadays to kind of, you know, Miz TV is great, but just don't get as much of that type of segment. I know Alexa Bliss has her moment of bliss and things like that, but yeah.
No, but with the right guy and the right thing. Yeah. I mean, Piper's Pit, you know, even something a little quirky like the barber shop. I mean,
yeah, the barber shop. Yeah.
It was a good thing for some like mid card feuds. I mean, it wasn't like main event stuff, but it was good. Yeah. I mean, even Taker had one at one point, the funeral parlor or whatever it was.
Well, and yeah, and now, you know, even after all these years, and at this point, you're looking at over 30 years, Jake's still just as good on the mic as he was, you know, back then. Like,
you know, and I'll tell you what, I mean, you know what I would like to see is if they're going to do like a segment like that, bring in a legend for that.
That's a good way to bring it.
You know, like, I mean, I don't know. I'm no one's like jumping out at me of like who would be great in that role, but you know, you figure boom,
that's it. A quick roll up and Steamboat
Ventura stays a fast count. That was a good match.
A lot happening there. Yep. Oh, but then Jake attacking him after the fact. Yep.
Jeez. That was a really good match, man. Both guys, good workers, pretty fast paced. Steamboat's the man, obviously. Jake, I forgot. I mean, at this point, he's just in great shape. And it's a
big and we'll save it for another day. He did have a, he's beating him up. Eventually, we're going to get the pets out of the bag here. I'll just say that, like, when I was kind of trying to find a Jake match, this one was, at the top of some lists. It was second on some other lists. He had a long feud with Macho Man as well, too. Yep. That's another one that we can talk about as well. But he's really, I say, underrated. And we'll talk about what happened with the Hogan stuff. But now you've got Jake. And the fans kind of losing their mind a little bit here. And there's Damian once again, just a huge snake. Jesus.
Massive. Jeez.
That thing, that's at least 15 feet long. But stopped in his tracks because the fans losing their shit because Steamboat has pulled out the dragon from the... And he hits him with the fucking dragon.
Look at that dragon wag his tail.
What a call. I hope the documentary talks about it. So you got Jake walking out with the snake now, but then the alligator crocodile in the ring walking around. And Steamboat just dragging around. So
that would scare the shit out of me. I would never get near that thing or touch it.
Like Jake, I get was like trained to work with the snake, but like, yeah, he's just walking around with a, you can't tell too if its mouth is taped shut. Like it's like clear tape. It's gotta be taped shut, but like, what an angle just walking around. What'd you do with this Saturday night? Oh, just, you know, showed up with my dragon and had a wrestling match. So,
oh, all right. That was fun. All right. Let's get into the aftermath.
Ho! It's time for the aftermath.
All right, what'd you think?
It was stupid fun, you know? Like, it, by no means was it a wrestling match, but it was just a fun kind of, you know, something for us to watch and check out for a little bit. And it was fast-paced, though. I'll definitely say that. It was definitely all happening. And
yeah, it was fun.
I was sports entertained. It was fun. Yeah, absolutely. So,
good. I liked it, too.
So what happened though? So you actually had, this was really the end of their feud. And you know, kind of beating him in this one. So, you know, but of course, after we saw, you know, what happened here and we talked through that, you had, the two dragons, you know, the monsters of the snake and the dragon kind of being used against each other. Excuse me. So, you actually then in the future, kind of moving forward on this after their feud ended, it was the following month, it was Superstars actually. Steamboat started having his feud with Macho Man, losing the match, but, you know, kind of having, the feud continued and through January of that year with You know, Steamboat, he actually came back from it was a kayfabe injury, but kind of coming back and preventing Savage from attacking George the Animal Steel. Just a little bit of back and forth there. And then actually the match that we've talked about before on this show, culminating with the WrestleMania 3 match with Steamboat defeating Randy Savage for the Intercontinental Championship. And so, and as we've said during then, as it's been talked about many times, you know, that's one of, you know, it was the match of the year that year and one of the best matches ever. So, you know, kind of having that. So Jake the Snake, though, really, you know, got the Snake Pit kind of doing that. It was actually later this year, or really just a couple months after this, not even like 1986, 87, him getting the Snake Pit. Like you said, it was kind of like modeled after the Piper's Pit. We're doing interviews, you know, pushing wrestlers, getting feuds over with the crowds, just kind of doing that, those types of things. And so, that ran into the summer of 1987, but it was interesting because he actually, while he was a heel, he got a big, like the fans were behind him. And so while they wanted him to be the heel, that's not what the fans wanted. Like he just kind of had that support and things like that. And so that it was weird how it kind of played out, because like you said, that this was a time where he started taking on, it was actually November, like that month, like him challenging Randy Savage for the Intercontinental Championship. But during that match, like Vince on the commentary said, like, oh, they'd probably support Savage and they're not going to, you know, kind of playing up the two sides of it. But of course, everybody cheered for Roberts. And so it, like they were surprised. So they kind of had to move on the fly with kind of how it played out. It was a double DQ at the end of that match. But they had actually at this point, and so late 1986, they had actually had some storyline plans for Roberts to take on who was the fan favorite and the ultimate face, Hulk Hogan, but as Roberts as the heel. But because fans were responding so positively to Roberts kind of chanting DDT, like, you know, and really going in, there was actually a Snake Pit segment where they were chanting for Roberts. They were not necessarily on Hulk's side, kind of playing out that way, that this feud was just kind of dropped. Now, I found a quote, and this is when I said there was a, in 2015, it was an interview that Roberts gave that he kind of sarcastically, he thanked the fans for ruining what would have been the biggest and most profitable run of his career with Hulk Hogan, because he could not be the heel to Hulk Hogan's babyface during this time, and what that would have meant for television and him and everything else. And so he recognized it was in the works. Like, and he recognized that, like, while the fans loved him, it also fucked up his chances to wrestle with Hogan. So, yeah.
No, I now that you say that, I remember hearing that. It's so, oh, it's so true. But he would have, I mean, it would have just been such a good feud. But yeah, you know, it's funny because we always point to like 1996 of like when the NWO was like the bad guys, but being bad was good. And then, you know, and then it was Austin. Well, yeah, but Jake was kind of that way too, right? I mean, there were other times where, you know, they were able to nip it in the butt and just stop it. But there were other times where, you know, the bad guy was actually kind of a fan favorite. You know, it's no different than when people were booing Hogan when he was supposed to be the good guy and Sid was supposed to be the bad guy, right? Like, this has happened throughout wrestling. And, you know, I know Vince has things set in his ways, but you wonder, gosh, could Jake the Snake have been like a massive baby face during this era? Should you have turned Hogan heel at WrestleMania 6? I don't know. But it's interesting to think about that, where sometimes – they don't pivot like they should. They should just run with stuff when it works. I mean, even like the Daniel Bryan stuff, they fought it and fought it and fought it. And finally, they had to give in.
Yep, absolutely. And so this is one where it's interesting how this played out, because then while Steamboat and Savage had their moment at WrestleMania 3, Jake the Snake actually went on to take on the Honky Tonk Man. There, I saw some kind of stories on this one too, where he had been injured by the Honky Tonk Man, and like there was a little bit of back and forth of, you know, Jake saying that Honky went a little bit too hard with the guitar, and at the time the guitars weren't made to break like they are nowadays.
Yep.
And so it actually did legitimately injure him for a little bit. This kind of overall, and kind of what happened, like we said, it led to their match, which at WrestleMania 3, between the two of them. And this is when everyone remember, like, or most people remember, like with Alice Cooper, they had the snakes. They kind of played that up, you know, the big angle on that. And so I'm curious too. So at WrestleMania 4, Jake the Snake, of like, who knows what would have happened, because obviously like Andre and Hulk had their, you know, had a rematch and there was the tournament with that. But Jake ended up, it was a double DQ, or it was a time limit draw, excuse me. And so he had like one 15 minute match with Rick Rude, and then that was it. Like, and so WrestleMania 4, so who knows what would have happened if things were different, and like, you know, they were actually able to kind of play out a little bit story there. And then of course the year after that, WrestleMania 5, you're getting into the the superpowers at that point. But you had Jake Roberts taking on Andre the Giant that year. So it's just, you know, so who knows? It's that what if. You never know what could have happened. Like, that would have been a feud. That's one of those that missed opportunity that we just never got to see. That it probably would have been great, but who knows?
You know what else I was thinking about the other day, and I don't know why or what I was listening to or whatever, but my thoughts just go to wrestling storylines. There's pros and cons to that era versus this era. And so one of the cons I see with this era is there's a lot of stuff we didn't see. Either we never saw it, or we didn't see it on a big stage, or, you know, we didn't see it enough. And so, like, great example, Hogan Warrior. We never saw a second match or a trilogy or a blow-off cage match. We just got one match. And obviously the WCW thing years later doesn't count. But, you know,
right.
Savage Hogan. I mean, you could have done, you know, you could have done the cage match. You could have done the last man standing match. You know, it's just, and again, it doesn't always work out. Sometimes one match would be better than three, right? But there's a lot of stuff we didn't see. Like, if you had 12 pay-per-views, you get a heel Jake Roberts against Hulk Hogan. And Hulk Hogan would win, but you would have got that program for four Raws leading up to the pay-per-views. So I don't know. There's definitely things where I'm like, I could have used the trilogy in that standpoint. I could have used, you know, more from that. Even Hogan Andre, you're like, well, you got the big WrestleMania 3 match, but then guess what else you got? You got the double Hebners. You got the turn. Like, so you know what I mean? Like, sometimes these things didn't have enough TV time to mature, and we didn't get a second or a third match, or at least a rematch, and it would have been really cool. So again, that's what I don't like, or, you know, about that era. But of course now, you know, we're over programmed. We got too much stuff. So there's probably a happy medium somewhere there. I don't know what it is, but there was an era where it was nice to have a 1 hour Raw, 12 pay-per-views a year, and then that was it.
I agree. I think it's just one of those that I think it was the sign of the times, like, you know, just how things played out. But we still got some really great stuff from then. Like, this was one that, like, it was the kind of finishing to this. And there's of course more Jake the Snake to talk about. We got something to look, whatever the Dark Side, or, you know, Dark Side of the Ring's doing, we got something to look forward to there as well. So should be exciting. But overall, like, yeah. So, oh, we haven't given our scores. Oh my goodness. And so I haven't talked about the reviews. So you had that, and so this actually predated 1986 both newsletters, so I don't really have a lot of, and so this was not listed on there, and so because when they kind of started, but the kind of one write-up I did find, it was just a 3-star kind of, you know, this review someone wrote that he tosses Steamboat in the ring and pulls out Damien, but now Steamboat has his dragon out that's actually a baby crocodile, because that's much scarier than a python. He hits Jake with it to send him and Damien hightailing it to the back. Silly ending aside, this was good, fast-paced action. I agree. I'm going to give it a 7 because, you know, it wasn't, you know, great, but it was fast-paced. There was a lot happening. One thing I did not mention was PWI did rank these guys. The rankings were a little bit different back them because it was in the early kind of days of it. Jake the Snake was the number 3 most hated wrestler in wrestling that year. Ricky the Dragon Steamboat was the number 4 most popular wrestler in wrestling that year. And so you had guys at the top of their game. It's hard to deny that. I think a 7 just because it was stupid, but it was just funny. It did have a goofy ending, but it made sense too, which we appreciate that. It made sense with the storyline and the characters. And there was, I'm actually going to move it up to 7.5 because of the build, because there was a good build that got them there. And it wasn't a ton of matches. You didn't need to see it every week, but they did tell a story over the length of, you know, really since WrestleMania 2 up until this point, you know, so 6-8 months later, it made sense. And so, yeah, I'm going to 7.25. I'll give it 7.25. So, yeah. How about you?
I got this thing at a 5.
Okay.
Didn't hate it. Didn't love it. Solid storyline. I think what I needed was a longer match with a better finish.
That's I agree. That I will concede that point. Yeah, for sure. But good wrestling though. You know, I'll take it. I'll take what I can get. And
you know, I like the deep dive. We got to mix some more old stuff in there too.
Well, and that's, because like I said, we and I agree, we have not covered an older match in a while. So that's what we got, the road to WrestleMania coming up. So we got a lot of older matches that we can cover. So that'll be good. So, so that's all I got. You got any final thoughts, my friend?
I do not. This was a fun episode. Enjoyed it.
Yes.
As always, we'd like to thank you all for listening. This was a lot of fun. Thank you, as always, for joining us on The Payoff.